This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney.
Amazing. These are just a few of the designs that can be made with Spirograph by Kenner. Change wheels, change colors. Make a million multicolored designs, each so beautiful your eyes won't believe what your hands have done. Spirograph by Kenner. So much fun you'll never want to stop. Spirograph, the world's most fascinating new toy.
Kenner Toys was founded in Cincinnati by the Steiner brothers in 1947, and the company went on to be a powerhouse in the toy industry with such hits as the Easy Bake Oven, Spirograph, which you just heard about, and the Star Wars collection, just to name a few. The main branch of the Public Library of Cincinnati and Hamilton County is currently celebrating Kenner and other local toy companies with several exhibits and an upcoming symposium. And joining us this afternoon are former Kenner executive and former Hasbro president Ginger Kent, son of Kenner co-founder Philip Steiner and former Kenner manager Corky Steiner, senior Kenner designer and the primary designer of the Star Wars toy line, Jim Swearingen, and Kenner memorabilia collector and curator for the Just in Time for the Holidays Kenner Toys exhibit, Josh Blake. So what was your favorite Kenner toy? Join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Josh, Ginger, Jim, and Corky, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you.
Corky, start off, tell us what motivated your father and your uncles to start a toy company.
Well, my uncle, Al Steiner, was driving down the street, as the story goes, and he saw someone dip a wand into a bottle, and they saw bubbles come out from that. And from that idea, they went to their chemist. Al said, could you replicate this? And he said, sure. And they started with bubble guns, bubble rockets, bubble jets. So the answer to your question is they started with bubble toys. They had been in the soap and soft drink business. In fact, Bob Steiner described his early years as joining the world's smallest conglomerate. And once the toys took off, the other products kind of fell a little bit by the wayside. So toys generated other products, infant lines, and then, of course, cartoons were a very favorite among kids. And the Give a Show projector, where kids could actually create their own cartoons and show their own cartoons at home. But that's a quick recap of the early years.
So how successful were those bubble toys?
Successful enough to lead into other toys, that led into other toys, that eventually led into other toys. And have you ever seen kids watch construction?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the idea of Al Steiner was to try to replicate what kids saw in the adult world. And one of those items was a girder and panel building set. And that was one of the major successes after the Give a Show projector.
So, Josh, I'm just curious, are the bubble toys part of the display at the library?
Absolutely. That particular, section is probably one of the more sought after, in terms of items and Kenner memorabilia that anyone who's interested in Kenner toys, specifically that they collect, anything Kenner, that's one of the more sought after items, the Bubblematic gun, and, some of those following.
And there was a Bubblematic gun, a bubble rocket?
Bubble rocket, bubble jet, all kinds of bubble toys.
Bubble things. And they were highly popular. Ginger, just how prolific was Kenner?
I'm wildly prolific in terms of launching products. I think at one point I tried to count one year, and we'd launch over 1,000 some odd toys, because with all these lines, Star Wars, Batman, Transformers, G.I. Joe, there was many different iterations of all the toys. So the fact that actually a company that wasn't that particularly large could launch that many toys and deliver them on time, since one of our favorite sayings was we couldn't delay Christmas, we couldn't push back Christmas if we had a snafu. And it was fabulous. We really did make major, major toys, lots of toys.
Ginger, would you say that the toy industry is an industry in warp speed, and even though we needed to do all the disciplines of, for instance, you at Procter, that it was kind of incredible that we were able to do so many items at, in the time frames that were set about?
I think that was one of the most fun things about the place is the fact that we made things happen on as you said, warp speed in reference to Star Wars. But it was, our timelines were fast. People, that I think one of the nicest things about working at Kenner was the culture. It was such a wonderful culture that everyone did whatever it took to make something happen on time. If it was an all-nighter required by 50 people in the company, that happened. It was really an amazing place.
Well, while Jim's here, everything starts with the designers. And we heard after not too long a time that at some point the designers, when they went out to Hollywood, would show their designs to the folks in Hollywood who would actually take their designs and put them into the movies. Is that right, Jim?
In some cases, that actually happened. I know on Star Wars, there were things that were being kind of co-designed, but early on, we were following their Bible. So it's fun.
One of the movies, a good example of that was one of the Batman movies with Joel Schumacher as the director. I can't remember which number Batman movie, but basically, our designers presented their idea for the Batmobile, and he loved it, and that became the Batmobile.
That became
for the
actual
movie.
Batmobile.
Yes.
Wow. Jim, tell me the story of how the Star Wars line came to be. I mean,
the real story?
Yeah, tell us the real story behind that.
I worked in preliminary design, which was kind of a conceptual area where we evaluated toys and came up with new concepts. And one of the things that we did was read a lot of TV scripts at the time. So that's where $6 Million Man came from. We'd see scripts from mostly television shows. And Star Wars came into the preliminary design area, and it was in October of 76, before the movie was finished. And my boss, Dave Okada, came in with the script and said, "Who wants to read this script?" And I had already known George Lucas from his film THX 1138, and he was just finished with American Graffiti. So I was like, "I'll volunteer. I'll take that home." So I took it home that night and read the script, brought it back to David, true story, gave it to David and said, "Go in your office, read this script. We have to do this." I was convinced from the moment I looked at it that it was a thing we had to do. And at the time, I was a 27-year-old star, kind of science fiction fan, so it was just natural that I was just gung-ho from the minute it came in the door. It was exactly the wrong thing, technically, to do for a toy company. It was a movie that was going to be premiering in May, and it was and toy business was really September to December was the major market. So it was going way too early. It was going to be in and out of the theater. So by all rights, it should have been like, oh, a flash in the pan, and we wouldn't have anything out in time for Christmas. But we just pushed on it, and I think no one actually saw it. It was going to be coming from nowhere. Because we were used to TV shows that had 13 or 26 episodes guaranteed that started in September, because the new TV season started in September and would go through the Christmas season. $60 Million Man would start up every September with the new series. So this was really counter to everything that was around. The action figures didn't exist before Star Wars. Boys were playing with Hot Wheels and 12-inch action figures, G.I. Joe and $60 Million Man. So the whole thing, all the marketing, all the promotion, everything that was going on with toys really changed with Star Wars. Now it's all pre-sold. Everything's, you go out with new things with Marvel Comics or anything, they're already designing product way before the movies come out. So,
did you have contact with George Lucas when you were creating the Star Wars toys? You saw the script. Did you actually work with him on this?
Initially, I worked with the marketing and promotions people. I didn't meet George until 78 when we went out to see Boba Fett for the first time as an early promotion. I have had lunch with his dog, though. I think his dog's probably long gone. But he had a Malamute called Indiana, which is where Indiana Jones came.
So the line in the one Indiana Jones movie is true. I named you after the dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now, is the Star Wars line the most successful moneymaker that Kenner has had, Corky? Ginger?
Boy, yes. That's a really good question.
Yes. Probably the entire segment of all the Star Wars is in the entertainment world, if not the one of the top entertainment properties of all times. And in the toy industry, in terms of dollar sales, it was a magnanimous moneymaker. But if you were to look at the collector's market, there is no product that can compare in terms of collectability and memorabilia as Star Wars. You can look at the most inexpensive items within Star Wars. For instance, we had Star Wars figures, and at one year, a couple of years, we had Star Wars coins. And those coins were they were actually a premium. When you bought the figure, you got a coin. And the coins were really just kind of an add-on. But in today's collector's market, some of those coins that would be maybe worth $1, $2, $3 are worth hundreds of dollars. Wow. In the collector's market. Something kind of incredible.
That is incredible. Josh, how big a part did the Star Wars, does the Star Wars line play in the exhibit?
Well, we tried to do a balance, you know, because we wanted to, display the company as a whole, you know, as opposed to just focusing directly on Star Wars. And, you know, with all the publicity leading up to the exhibit, I mean, that seems to be the topic. I mean, that's kind of what's driving it. And we realize that. But we have the real challenge was trying to figure out, in the 1980s section, how to not just explode it with, all of the product, because everybody who had assisted us with Dan and I with the display, everybody had that one item they wanted to throw in there. And, so we moved, a chunk of it over to the 1970s. And then, of course, it came back in the 90s. So we have it in three decades, but, we still tried to just flavor it, in with all of the other items that we had going that were predominant as well. I mean, this was at a time when, they were really looking at, these licenses as a lucrative, venture. So, we wanted to kind of give them their due as well.
If I may, one story that needs to be told is at the time of Star Wars, male action figures were in the vicinity of 13 inches. And the genius of folks like Jim Swearengen and others presented what heretofore had been never heard of was 3 3/4 inch figures. And 3 3/4 inch figures had never sold. And when Jim and his team presented to Joe Mendelson, the then vice president of the company, who said, what is it that you have? It's so important. And they said, look, we've got a movie property here that everything in this movie is toyetic. And Joe went immediately into the then president, Bernie Loomis, who said, supposedly, if you guys think it's this good, let's go for it. And when they went for it, they did this with 3 3/4 action figures. And part of the logic of that was the figures could fit inside the vehicles. So the vehicles actually had drivers, pilots, operatives that could be part of the Star Wars line. And sometimes when the designers think about what went on with Star Wars, they forget that the heart of the soul is the figures. And they were 3 3/4 inches. And as Paul Harvey might say, and that's the rest of the story.
And we'll continue our conversation about Kenner Toys. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
It's Darth Vader, watch out! And he's got a lightsaber.
It's Kenner's new Star Wars action figures, each sold separately.
I got you now, Ben Kenobi.
With R2-D2 and C-3PO. There's even Chewbacca and Han Solo.
Someone's coming, Chewie.
Who's there? It's Princess Leia and Luke Skywalker.
Now I know the Force is with us.
Darth Vader, R2-D2, C-3PO, and other Kenner Star Wars action figures, each sold separately.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. My guest this afternoon as we talk about Kenner Toys and the exhibits at the main branch of the Public Library of Cincinnati and Hamilton County, former executive and former Hasbro president Ginger Kent, the son of Kenner co-founder Philip Steiner, and former Kenner manager Corky Steiner, senior Kenner designer and the primary designer of the Star Wars toy line, Jim Swearingen, and Kenner memorabilia collector and curator for the Just in Time for the Holidays Kenner Toys exhibit, Josh Blake. You can join us at 513-419-7100. And Corky, hearing these commercials, I wanted to ask you about this. When did Kenner, it founded in 47, but when did it actually start advertising nationally?
Well, actually, Kenner was founded in 46. A lot of the information that's given is shortchanges it.
A little dated there, okay.
A little dated there. And in the early 50s, Bob Steiner, who was in sales, noticed that television seemed to be having an influence on kids, particularly during cartoons. And he convinced his father and brothers that it would probably be a good idea to advertise something of Kenner on television. And they had the large sum of $2,000 for advertising. And that was the start of advertising, and it mushroomed and grew after that.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Michael and Findlay. Hi, Michael.
How you doing?
Good, thanks. Go right ahead.
Well, thank you. I'm as a native, it's hard not to talk about Kenner sometimes. And in the end, I have built a business that's based on fascination with Spirograph.
Okay. Interesting.
What we do is we engrave fine silver, mostly for jewelry, but we engrave all kinds of metal, actually, with machinery that produces the same type of patterns, some of them the same way. They're called geometric chucks. Others imitate the patterns, rose engines. But I'm running literally 19th and early 20th century Swiss machinery. We're the only company in the United States that does it on the scale that we do it. And we actually retail finished jewelry at Findlay. But, I mean, from the time my sister was a child, we had easy bake ovens. I don't know that you guys created the vacuum forming machine, but that was another one. But Spirograph was instrumental in my
inspired your business
entire company.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, Michael.
Actually, Michael, this is Ginger. I was actually, my first assignment at Kenner was, I was the product manager on Play-Doh, the Easy Bake Oven, and Spirograph. And Spirograph, one of the most fun things is the fact that our designers kept coming up with different ways to present it. So we had Spirograph Junior. We just had multiple different ways. And it was a designer named Charlie Cummings who did a lot of work on Spirograph.
Spirograph was brought to Kenner by Joe Steiner, who convinced his brothers, who up to that point in time only wanted to concentrate on homegrown ideas and really didn't look beyond the hallowed halls of Kenner for ideas. Fortunately, Joe was able to convince his family, and Spirograph became an award-winning toy very early on in the game. And the slogan, "Your eyes won't believe what your hands have drawn," incredible geometric designs and patterns. And today, actually last year, Spirograph celebrated its 50th anniversary. It's still on the market today, and it has been sub-licensed by Hasbro to another company who has done quite well in the secondary market with Spirograph and all the additions to that line.
Corky, Easy Bake Oven was one of the things we were talking about. What about toys for girls?
Easy Bake Oven was created, or the idea of Easy Bake Oven was created during some sales meetings, and someone had actually suggested trying to do a pretzel maker similar to what you see in New York, and the team that did a lot of the creativity said, great idea for a pretzel maker. Why don't we look beyond a pretzel maker and see if we can expand that concept? And the R&D team came up with the idea of a oven that could bake pies, cakes, and cookies in 6 to 16 minutes using an ordinary light bulb. The Easy Bake Oven was the product that put Kenner on the map in the toy industry with both television. Later in the history of the Easy Bake Oven, and incidentally, there is a book out on the 50 years of the Easy Bake Oven. And just parenthetically, when you say 50 years in the toy industry, that's really, really rare. And if you hear a company that talks about toys that are 30, 40, 50 years old, you know that those are incredible toys in the toy industry. Not so recently, one of the companies, Hasbro Kenner, said to themselves, gee, this is an item that's marketed for girls. Maybe there might be a market for boys for the Easy Bake Oven. And voila, believe it or not, boys and girls now play with the Easy Bake Oven.
Actually, and Corky, we did, having been the product manager in the Easy Bake Oven, it's gone through lots of different iterations. We had, when Kenner was owned by General Mills, it was the Betty Crocker Easy Bake Oven. And actually, I was part of the decision to, once we were spun off and really no longer a part of General Mills, we didn't really need, Betty Crocker actually didn't add much value to the name. It was the Easy Bake Oven that resonated with everyone. And I, as a matter of fact, I can actually attest to the fact that I really wanted an Easy Bake Oven as a child, and my mother wouldn't give me one. So I was actually delighted 25 years later to be the product manager on the Easy Bake Oven.
You probably got to cook more Easy Bake than you would as a kid.
You're right.
Being the product manager.
You're right. And actually, we did Easy Bake every which way you could think of. We had it. We made pizzas with them eventually, besides cakes. You could make pizzas. You were always constantly thinking up new ways of using that same Easy Bake Oven to add value to it. And actually, one of the big ideas that I think Tom Osborne was a part of was taking the top part, which was still very hot. So you had the oven, but creating a warming tray on top, though you could melt a chocolate to drizzle over your cakes. I think that was one of the, or make fudge even. So those were some of the different iterations of the Easy Bake Oven.
One of the incredible things about the Easy Bake Oven is while it was a single toy, the ingenuity of the team at Kenner and the other companies was how to make a brand out of a single toy. And that is one of the reasons why the Easy Bake Oven enjoys the prominence that it does today of all the offshoots of the oven.
Let's talk with Drake and Chevy. Hi, Drake.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Go right ahead.
Hey, I just want to say, first of all, I really appreciate the conversation. And I actually used to work at Hasbro when it actually after it was Kenner and it became Hasbro. And I worked back in the R&D department with Brian Polson, if you remember him. And he led a really great team of guys, and we worked on the Aliens line, Star Wars, Batman, Jurassic Park, and Toy Soldiers, and it was an awesome experience. So my question is, what are they working on right now? And I know they've moved to Rhode Island, but what are they working on right now that the toy market and the kids, customers will really enjoy?
That's all top secret, of course. But we're all long past that, so
yeah.
Certainly, we can't answer what Hasbro's doing now.
Right. Certainly the big news is obviously Star Wars for this year. If you look at anything, any reports of Hasbro, that's certainly what they're looking at as their number one toy. But yes, right, we're long since gone, so sorry.
Yeah, but the question's a great question, and it goes to understanding the whole creative process in the toy industry. And it goes without saying that a toy takes between 12 and 24 months to be created and to get to the marketplace. And so people right now are reading and discussing and analyzing not what toys are for this year's Christmas, but for next year's Christmas, because in a few short months, there's something called the Toy Fair, when all new products for 2016 are presented. And many of those new products are really in the prototype stages and beyond right now. So in essence, your question is right on. The lead time that it takes to create the toys and then develop them, and it really is in warp speed. Hope that helped on your answer.
And I gotta say, you know, jump in here real quick. You know, from a collector standpoint, I mean, we are kind of. I mean, for me personally, I'm a bit starstruck. You know, talking to, you know, it's like the employees that work at Kenner are sort of our childhood heroes, and then especially as adults, it's almost like wow, it's almost that level of rock star. You know, to us, it's like wow, you're really a human being, and you know, we can talk. You know, but it's just the fact of the processes that they developed. I mean, I don't think it's too far of a stretch for someone to state that if it weren't for Kenner and the ingenuity that came out of Cincinnati, we would not have Star Wars. George Lucas may have not been able to go on to do The Empire Strikes Back. I mean, and I don't think that Kenner got they got some fanfare for that, but I don't think that they really got the credit, you know, for driving that. I mean, everybody kind of looks back and they say, well, George knew this from the beginning. I don't think he actually knew. I think he kind of thought it might, you know, he might make his money back. But, boy, the marketing and the turnaround for these products, that was his meal ticket. That was why, just as much as it was the success of American Graffiti, you know, for him to get to do his Star Wars film, it was Kenner Toys that allowed him to do The Empire Strikes Back, in my opinion. So,
well, as a designer, just in concert with that, collectors like you and all the collectors out there of not just Star Wars toys, but toys in general, really keep the toy business going. I mean, the collectors had a tremendous amount to do with what has happened with Star Wars over, it's now been 37 years. I mean, keeping it up in the air. So it's not just the toy companies, but the people that play with them and the people that collect them. So.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us this afternoon. Former Kenner executive and former Hasbro president Ginger Kent, the son of Kenner co-founder Philip Steiner, and former Kenner manager Corky Steiner, and senior Kenner designer, primary designer of the Star Wars toy line, Jim Swearingen, and Kenner memorabilia collector and curator for the Just in Time for the Holidays Kenner Toys exhibit, Josh Blake. The Kenner Toy Symposium takes place at the main branch of the Public Library December 12th, and the Just in Time for the Holidays exhibits, those are going to be on display at the main library until January 16th. You can find a link to more information at WVXU.org. Coming up, Hamilton County's prosecutor releases more details on the shooting death of a Cincinnati police officer. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
Support comes from Goodwill. Donating your vehicle to the Goodwill Auto Auction